I would start applying more individual human personal touches. I would be sending out emails like, haven't seen you this week, or hope everything's okay, or whatever. What I have tried to do is send out a Sunday night email that doesn't just say your new material's ready, but here are the links and here is what we have coming up. And please, please hit reply and tell me how you're finding this.
Welcome to Level Up Your Course, where we pull back the curtain on what it takes to create learning that transforms lives. You will hear stories from business owners like you who share their success and their struggles. This is not where you come to hear passive income myths, friend. This is where you learn the truth about building a profitable learning platform. I am your host, Janelle Allen, and this is today's episode. What's up, everyone? It is Janelle. Today, I am joined by Marcus Blankenship. Marcus is a leadership coach, author, and trainer who helps tech leaders improve their leadership skills. A little while ago, he launched a new program, Software Leader Seminar, which is what we are here to talk about. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Janelle.
Well, I'm excited. I know we've been communicating via email for a little while. And when I found out you were launching a new program, I really wanted to find out how that went for you. And I'm excited to chat about it because it's not often that I get to speak with someone so soon after releasing a program. But before we get into all of that good stuff, you are in Oregon, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that where you're originally from?
Yes, actually it is.
Ah, okay. And I know you were talking about travel a bit. So is all of your family in Oregon as well?
Well, they are, except my son and his beautiful daughter and wife have decided to become digital nomads. And so they sold their house on a whim this summer and decided to Airbnb around Europe for 18 months. So it's been about 8 weeks since we've seen the baby. And, you know, when you're a grandparent, you love your children, but the grandchildren are really what drives you to travel. And so we're flying to Berlin for 20 days to go spend some time with them.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit jealous and happy that they're on that journey. All right. So we have a tradition on the show, and it's called the Rapid Five. Five quick questions to help listeners get to know you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Number one, paper books or audiobooks?
Paper books.
Number two, how do you feel about squirrels?
Love squirrels, except when they eat the garden.
You're the first person to say that with so much like passion. I love squirrels. I've had so many stories, so many squirrel stories, but I'm glad that squirrels have a home near you, Marcus.
I have 10 acres. There are lots of squirrels on my land. I just want them out of the garden.
Yeah, fair enough. Number three, what is your favorite condiment?
A salsa.
Mm. Number four, what's one myth about entrepreneurship that you would like to obliterate off the face of the earth?
That anyone is a born entrepreneur.
And number five, what is the hardest lesson you have learned as an entrepreneur so far?
That sometimes you just have to give up.
Mm. Okay, well, I want to come back to that. That sounds like a story. But first, let's talk about your journey. Tell us about your business journey. I mean, how did you become the tech leadership guy?
Yeah, I worked for 14 years at a big enterprise, kind of where I grew up and cut my teeth in this little town in Oregon where I live in the middle of nowhere in the desert. Just happened that the biggest window and door manufacturer in the world is headquartered here. And I was able to join as a junior programmer and work my way up through the ranks, getting an opportunity to, you know, become a senior programmer and an architect, and then a team lead and a manager and so forth. And in 2008, I decided during the worst economy that the United States has seen in 25 years to start a business. Doesn't that seem like a good idea? And in the middle of nowhere, which needed no digital marketing help, I decided to start with a partner at the company, the big company we both worked at. We decided we would start this digital website company. And I literally was walking up and down Main Street, knocking on doors of local businesses going, hey, do you have a website? And half the time getting thrown out on my ear because they said, you know, our last website guy was a big jerk and he won't even return our calls. Why would you be any different? Why should we talk to you? You're all the same.
Ouch.
So time went on, and that business ran successfully for 8 years. We took on another partner. We grew to about 20 people and about 60 contractors. And we did some really nice work. A lot of it turned into web and mobile application development. So my background's in software engineering, and that's kind of where we focused the company. Well, in about 3.5 years ago, the partnership imploded. And sometimes you just have to know when you're dead. Mm. And you just have to realize you're a zombie. And it's time to just lie down and call it quits. So we finally did that, and we're much happier for it. But instead of going and getting a real job, I felt like I just had one more run in me to see if I could do a business on my own. And this time I wanted to do a business that was just me, no employees, no partners, no payroll,
yeah,
just me trying to do great work and sustain myself and my family. And that's what I've spent the last 3 years doing. The way I got into anything like coaching or leadership consulting was really by accident. After my business closed down, I happened to mention on a few agency owner forums I was a part of, a small community, hey, I'm closing the business. If anyone wants to talk about how to not screw up your business, I'm happy to jump on the phone. There was no money involved.
Yeah.
But I thought, no one's going to want to talk to the loser. No one wants to talk to the failure. Turns out that people wanted to talk. So one conversation turned into two, turned into four. 3 months later, I'm booked 20 hours a week on free calls. And the same people are asking to talk again next week. They're saying, this is amazingly valuable. Even though I didn't have all the answers, I started to help them look at things differently. I started to offer different possibilities of things they could do. They felt very stuck in their ways. That was sort of a big realization for me that, well, if there's demand, there's probably money.
Yeah.
So the next person who asked me to do it, I said, oh, I crossed my fingers and I took a leap and I said, this is how much it costs. And they said, great, here we go. And that was kind of how that business was born. About 18 months ago, I pivoted to go from agency owners as an audience, who's a great audience, and I still have a lot of them that I chat with, to people who work at a company and are in management and leadership around programmers. Most of them have been programmers. In fact, I think exclusively people on my list and people who come to my courses are engineers who somehow got roped into managing or leading something and feel really uncomfortable with it. So that's the audience I focus on today.
Yeah. You know, there's something inherently valuable and also something that resonates with people when you're vulnerable about how you messed up, you know, where maybe life took a turn that you didn't expect. And it opens the door. And I think it's because we don't hear people talk about, you know, the times that they may have failed or, you know, the times where they were down and how they got out of it or what they went through. And I love that you said that you thought nobody wanted to talk to you. You know, nobody wants to talk to this person who failed, quote unquote. But people do. People do want to reach out and get insight and advice from a very real person. So you are in this position now where, first of all, can you give us, I'm just trying to set the timeline, the year that you started offering the free calls was what?
Was the end of 2014.
Okay, got it. So then about 18 months later, it turned into paid calls, and that's how things started. Okay.
Just to amend that a little bit, I think it was about 4 months later, I started asking for money.
Got it.
But it was about 18 months later, I pivoted audiences.
Okay,
and I went
from
the owner to the person who is not an owner, but still is managing people. Very much the same kind of work.
Yeah. Before we talk about, you know, your program, what were some reasons that you made that pivot? Because I don't get an opportunity to talk about pivoting very often. What did you base that decision off of?
People who own the company, who are technical or design experts, have all the problems of leadership and management, but they also have all the problems of finances and sales and marketing and budgeting and everything else. And so, frankly, is when they joined the program, I have a variety of things, group programs, individual coaching, whatever. I noticed over time that leadership and management skills were always their third problem.
Yeah.
That's just a reality. First is money, second is time. And the third is they said, I need to be better at running my team, at delegating work, at giving one-on-ones, at really building a great culture. Those were all important things, but they didn't matter at all if there was no money coming in the door,
yeah,
or if they were just completely consumed with the work and there was no time. And I finally realized that even though your audience expresses a pain, hey, I want this, if they are actually not in a position to learn and use and consume and grow, then my work really wasn't very effective. In fact, most of my conversations in the quote unquote leadership, coaching was actually about marketing and sales and client relationships and pricing, all stuff which I've talked a lot about, but there's a lot better people out there than me for those things. So I just started sending people away. You know, I think you should talk to Jonathan Stark. I think you should talk to Philip Morgan. I think you should talk to this or that person, because I can tell that leadership is actually not your biggest problem.
Mm. What fear did you have around sending people away and focusing?
Well, I had the fear that I'd have to go get a real job. You hit the nail on the head, yeah. The fear of focusing. And you know, these people are paying me hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars a month. So it's not like it's no money at all. And I'll be honest, like the business hasn't done so well that I'm making $1 million a year.
Yeah.
So it was actually a really like long process of realization that if I was going to do my best work, I had to find people who were in a position to really utilize it and to get the best outcomes.
Got it. Okay. So I want to talk about leadership, and specifically the first question when I first found out about you, I thought, well, what is different about leadership for tech leaders versus leadership for anyone else? Can you talk about any specific challenges that tech leaders face that maybe other leaders don't? Or is that a thing?
I think it is a thing. I like to frame it like this. Tech leaders are not the only people who have to lead smart, motivated experts, but they certainly have to learn how to do that effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Design leaders have to learn how to do this too. Marketing leaders. There are many jobs where you have a less skilled workforce, McDonald's, Walmart, or even manual labor. If you own a company that builds houses, you might have great people on your crew, but they probably all really know a lot less than you. And so part of what you're doing is mentoring and training and apprenticeship and all that other stuff. And that's great. Those are important aspects of leadership. But when you're leading experts, you've got to get out of the way. You've got to empower them to make decisions.
Yeah.
You've got to learn to trust them. And you've got to create an environment where they're free and feel safe to work on the hardest problems, to actually get things done. But it's so hard because you're an expert too. It's almost easier if you don't know anything about technology or software engineering. If, mm-hmm. if you go in and say, well, I have to rely on my team because I don't know how to do it, then you're forced to use leadership and management skills to accomplish the task. But when you're a technical leader, if you just got promoted to software manager or tech lead, your first instinct when something happens is to dive in and do the work.
Yeah.
And that's really dangerous.
So you made your pivot, and did you focus on, as I know you offer mentorship, I don't know if that program is still live, but I saw that you had a mentorship program. Did you focus on that model of mentorship coaching? Were you still doing consulting? What did your business look like before you started creating or got the idea for a program?
Yeah, it looked like one-on-one coaching, which I sort of framed as executive coaching because it was usually director or VP or CTO level people purchasing it due to the price. And then what I call coaching circles or mentoring groups. And that's groups of no more than five that get together and on a regular basis and problem solve together, share experiences, get my advice, but also advise each other. And I really enjoy that kind of work, but it's what I found was that many people are not in a place where they are ready to invest themselves and endure the potential humiliation of admitting to real people the problems they're having. Mm. And I realized that everybody has these problems, but a lot probably like marriage therapy or any kind of therapy where you're talking about it, it involves a lot of uncomfortable conversations at times.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, maybe I can spread my helpfulness differently. And the message is very much the same, but I thought maybe a course would allow me to not just reach a bigger audience, but to reach people who were not comfortable actually showing up on video and speaking about their problems. The folks who are in it love it and they stick with it for years, but it feels like a big transition to try something like that.
Yeah. Well, first, I love how you said spread your helpfulness. I love how you phrased that there. Let's talk about Software Leader Seminar. And before we get into what the program is comprised of, how is it structurally different from the mentorship model that you just talked about, the circle? What is different from a structure standpoint between that and Software Leader Seminar?
The mentoring circle picks up a broad set of topics over a year, but we spend a lot of time in ad hoc conversations about what's going well where you work today and what's going poorly. What's mm-hmm. your biggest problem? So we're solving the problems that are in the moment and kind of actually have topics as a fallback. Oh, no one has anything to talk about? Let's talk about your one-on-ones. So a little bit of prep is needed to say, like, this is what we could talk about, but what the group has expressed, and each group is slightly different. Groups usually express, we like to come together and have a conversation and frankly, unburden ourselves and help each other.
Yeah.
That doesn't require curriculum, doesn't require preparation. We've tried book clubs. They said, hey, this is a fun idea. We never want to do book club again because we don't have time for it. It looks good on paper, but the reality is we just didn't have time to read. So then we let each other down. And the course is structured over 12 weeks. Of course, has a curriculum, has lessons. It is primarily me speaking to these other people through video or writing. So it is delivered over a period of time. It has a start date and an end date and a delivery platform. And so those feel structurally very different. Someone buys it, they know when it's going to start and they know what's going to end. And if they don't keep up, they know they get all the videos at the end or all the materials and they can sort of just continue at their own pace if they decide to.
Got it. So one of the questions I love to ask is, what is the goal for your program? What should your target learner be able to do upon completing the program?
Yeah, my target learner, when they're done with the program, should be able to observe themselves working better, to understand how to change their own behavior, to understand how to teach their team how to learn new things, and to understand how to facilitate change and learning on their team. It's about creating a team and an environment that's safe enough where everyone can really contribute. And usually that means removing environmental or political aspects of the team culture and of the work culture such that the team can begin to breathe freely again.
Yeah. How did you validate the desire for this program? Did you get requests? Did you pre-sell? What did that look like? How did you know this was something that would make money and be good for your audience?
The first thing I did, I think, as I mentioned it on Twitter, and a few people shared it. I think literally two people wrote me back with their email address, like, oh, we're interested. And then I wrote to my mailing list, which isn't very big. And I got, I think, about 60 people who said, yeah, I'll click this link to be on the waiting list.
Yeah.
I'd use the waiting list approach. And then that slowly built. And okay, well, this might be something. And then I scheduled calls with many of those people one-on-one. I'm a big believer in doing things that don't scale.
Yeah.
Silly things like talking with way too many people. And I just got on the phone and I'm like, what's your biggest problem? What do you want to learn? Why is this important to you? And I heard things like, I haven't found like a structured way to learn this. I'm stuck with trying to figure out what all the blogs on the internet say. And there's so much conflicting advice and there's no path to leadership. So I feel like I'm really drowning and thrashing and over my head and too busy. And I don't know what to focus on. Should I be reading books that the CTO recommends or books, or should I just be reading Medium articles? Or, you know, how do I do this? So even the learning aspect was confusing. They couldn't just go buy a book like Rails for Dummies or something that's like The Beginner's Guide to XYZ. All the management and leadership books seem to kind of throw you in the deep end and make a lot of assumptions, and they're really hard to apply. So I got the idea that I wanted to build something that would be easy to apply at work as people went along, and basically using their work environment as their leadership gym.
Got it. I love that. Okay. So what did the process of creating the course look like for you? I think I emailed you right when you were about to start, and you're like, I got people who have bought the program and I got to create this thing.
Is that the wrong way to do it? You're the expert.
No, it's not. But it was just interesting, the timing, and I could tell you were knee deep into it. So I really am excited to learn, what was the process like for you? And specifically, what approach or methodology did you use to figure out what to include in the course?
Oh, there's a lot in those questions. First, I'm going to say that the real answer involves not the word was, but is.
Yeah.
Because frankly, the course isn't over. We're halfway through and I'm still creating content.
Yep.
So at first, I thought what I had to do was to rush ahead and create all the content. And I kept beating myself up because I wasn't doing it fast enough and I was really stressing. So I thought, if I just can launch with 2 weeks worth of content, I'll at least buy myself some breathing room.
Yeah.
Okay. That means I know what it takes to do that. So I spent a lot of time, even though it doesn't look like it, on the sales page, on the marketing page, on figuring out, like writing nurturing emails to my list. Up until the point the course started, maybe like 10 days before the course started, I don't think I'd created a single video, but I had a goal to sell a certain number of seats. And I told myself, if I didn't hit the minimum, I was just going to refund everyone and say it's a wash.
Wow.
So I think, like, if I said, if I didn't have at least 20 people, I would just refund that money and say, this was fun, but I don't think there's enough demand. I ended up selling 62 seats. So I was pretty happy with that. But then, of course, I'm left with the fear of, well, I either have to do a really good job or give this money back.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big believer in the 100% money back guarantee. If it's not great, I don't want your money. Mm-hmm. So then I already had a topics outlined in the sales page. And I had started doing some writing and making some videos, but I was so nervous in front of the camera. And I've been on a lot of podcasts and I do a live show every week, but I just kept flubbing it up. And I futzed for days with my equipment, two different video cameras, an SLR, what mic do I use? I thought I needed to buy a whole bunch of new equipment. Finally, it just came down to me in front of the Mac, or sometimes in front of my phone, talking really plainly. And I just try and talk. Each lesson is also really short. So structurally, I started out with the idea that I would deliver a 5-minute lesson every day. Now, Janelle, you are a course expert. You probably can predict how this went. It did not go great. So 3 weeks in, I realized that people were getting overwhelmed. Engagement was really dropping. And I was using this platform, which is not meant to be used for courses. I'm going to tell you, I did everything wrong. I'm just going to be honest. You can use me again, just like my coaching, as an example of what not to do when you do a course, if you want. So I decided that I would use discourse forum software to deliver the course over time and to also facilitate discussion, because I'm a big believer that discussion is where people learn.
Yeah.
So figure every day people were getting a 5-minute video and two questions. It was supposed to be really short and sweet, but turns out the questions were kind of thoughtful. Those were the places where people would watch the video. They wouldn't answer the questions. They'd come back at night. Well, long and short of it, engagement started to go down. And I said, well, this isn't going to be good. I've screwed this up. So what should I do? I need to do something to motivate people. Well, then I made another mistake. I said, You know what? I'll put people into teams. Because teams, small groups, small teams will foster camaraderie. People can go through it together. They'll get to know each other better. We'll have team rooms in Slack, and we'll kind of kick off with a small little team project, like give yourself a name and choose a mascot. Well, turns out that this actually created more pressure for people. And then I got feedback of like, oh, great, I was behind. And now I'm ashamed I'm behind because there's a team of four other people who are expecting me to catch up. And yeah, I can't balance all this. And oh, okay. So once I realized the impact of that, and I realized that some teams had come together and were enjoying it, I emailed everybody and I said, all right, I'm learning too. And I'm going to just say teams are entirely optional. The only thing I ask you to do is communicate to your team. You don't want to participate, and that is totally fine. And you can go through it at your own pace. So we're now about 6 weeks in. Engagement is okay. I think it's kind of leveled off. I'm seeing people come in at different points. And I've started releasing all the lessons Sunday night at midnight. Mm-hmm. So you get the week's worth of content. And the idea is, like, I'm not going to spoon feed you now is my thinking. You'll get 4 to 5 short videos on Sunday night, and you can choose to do with them what you wish throughout the week. So I really look at it as a continuing experiment. I plan on running it again in January, and there's so much I want to change.
That was definitely one of my questions. I love everything that you're sharing because it's real. You know, a lot of times I have conversations with people who want to create courses and they're thinking about it, they're planning it, and they have these grand visions and they put a lot of pressure on themselves to just do it all and create everything at once and for it to be perfect. And the reality, and also the best way to do it, is to look at it as an experiment. It's going to be iterative. You know, your first version should not be the prettiest perfect thing. And so everything that you're explaining, I'm kind of chuckling on the inside because that is how it should be. You're going to learn. You're going to learn about yourself, about your target learners. You're going to learn, you know, how to deliver. And then you take all of those insights, and next time you deliver it, it's going to be better. So I love that you shared that because it's not often that we hear the real stories. People talk about the money all the time. You know, we hear the 6-figure course launch. People talk about how it's changed their business, but very few people talk about the messiness of creating that course. So thank you for sharing that with everyone.
Absolutely. And I have spent a lot of time this week thinking, I want to go to a different platform.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole other mess, right? And they all look alike unless you try it and takes for it. So to be honest, I don't know if I'll run it again after January. I want to do it again, but I have really am looking for the most impactful way to deliver this kind of help. If the course ends up being it for some people, fantastic. But if the course is generally, like if people say, this was fine, but it would have been just as good to get the videos, heck, maybe I'll just sell the videos in a download. I think the idea of learning online has so many different options and mediums that I really want to continue to play with it. I don't think I have to be tied into just one approach.
Yeah, absolutely. So something you started talking about was just challenges and constraints that your learners were experiencing, not just with the material, but things they have going on in life. And that is very important. And I think that course creators often don't consider that. So something that I call the learner journey. Where were you finding that people got stuck, I mean, with the curriculum? And how did you begin to manage that? What particular topics were making them feel stuck?
I am still really managing it. And this is actually one of the areas that I feel like I need to improve is visibility into the learner journey. Mm-hmm. If you throw everything on a forum, it's really hard to figure out and track in a real meaningful way with metrics. What's engagement? How many people are engaging this week versus last week? How many people are answering questions? Who's dropped out that you have no idea? Like, they were really active for 4 weeks and now they're gone. Because frankly, if I knew that, I would send out my approach. Maybe it's right or wrong. You would know. I would start applying more individual human personal touches. I would be sending out emails like, haven't seen you this week, or hope everything's okay, or whatever. What I have tried to do is send out a Sunday night email that doesn't just say your new material's ready, but here are the links and here is what we have coming up. And please, please hit reply and tell me how you're finding this. And I have gotten some really wonderful people who have hit reply and told me things that were working for them and things that weren't working at all.
Yeah.
I've also set up a type form survey and sent it out a few times saying just, you know, how do you find the pace? How do you find the content? Generally, I find that people start with wonderful intentions and a lot of enthusiasm, but frankly, it's just really hard to sustain. And I've also wondered about 12 weeks. Like, could I have done this in 4 weeks? Mm-hmm. Could I have done this in 2 weeks? Maybe 12 weeks feels like a slog, right? That's a long course.
Yeah.
Especially if it's completely asynchronous and it's so easy to slip and get a little behind. So I don't think I've actually found a particular topic, but I would definitely say at week 2, some engagement dropped off, and at week 4, engagement has dropped off. And I'm still in the middle of that journey to figure out how to take the temperature. And I want to try another experiment in the next couple of weeks to see if we can invite people who feel behind, frankly, to not worry about being behind, because the lessons don't have to be sequential. And I've said that a few times, but I feel like there's a pressure. Well, I don't want to skip to module 6 unless I've done module 4. They're all separate lessons and they can all be consumed. Maybe I should actually not even number them, to be frank, because maybe the numbering is implying the order that they have to be consumed in. Mm. So
there's something really beautiful about doing a pilot run of your program and being transparent about that. I think a lot of people are afraid and they feel like, you know, I have to make sure that this thing is perfect and I have to make sure that I set these expectations and people are going to get this. But what I found is that if your audience, especially if your audience is very engaged with you and they're really fans of your work, if you say, look, this thing is not, it's imperfect, this is the first time, people are more likely to give you that feedback, let you know what's working, what's not working, which is very valuable data that you can use next time. So I think that you're on the right track. And I love that your audience is super engaged and sharing with you, you know, the challenges and what's working. So you're going through this process. And I know you said that the course is running right now. Knowing what you do now, and you've talked a little bit about this, but I want to go deeper. What are some things that you already know that you're going to change for January?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I will remain transparent. That's one thing I want to remain, is transparent, even though it will no longer be called a beta course. I think transparency has really served me.
Yeah.
Love covers a multitude of sins, the Bible says. So it's like, you know, if people like you, they're willing to put up with a lot if there's an affection there. A couple of things I'm going to do. For example, one, I'm going to have weekly live office hours instead of biweekly, every 2 weeks, because I feel like if I meet with people every week, I'll have more opportunity to meet with more people. And the more they're in front of me, the more we're talking with each other, the more engaged they feel. Second, I'm considering moving away from videos delivered, which is great and convenient that I can work asynchronously. And I'm toying with the idea of doing these as live weekly teaching sessions.
Yeah.
If you fall behind, that's fine, but you are paying to be able to show up in a room with 150 other people and hear the lesson live, get the materials, and ask questions. So I'm playing with that. I don't know if it's a fit for everybody, and it might be just as hard for people not to, like, oh, that time doesn't work for me. But being really clear about when the live lesson is, and how long it lasts and what you'll get. I think maybe we'll let people pick and choose even the topics that they come listen to live versus those they say, oh, I think I've got that nailed. I'll go ahead and just catch the recording on that one.
Yeah.
And I've also considered putting people into small cohorts of 10 but right from the beginning and asking people, would you want to go through this in a group where you and your group get to know each other, form a little community, have a private Slack channel, can sort of work and wrestle with these ideas together? Or do you want to go through it alone? And letting people choose whether, you know, one of my big mistakes with assigning groups was not asking people, because some people thought it was a great idea, but then they'd get half their group mm-hmm. that never even returned their email.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I feel like it's a zero cost for me to say, do you want to be put in a group or do you want to go it alone? And of course, you can change your mind in the middle, but I'm just playing around with those ideas. One problem I'm having right now is when you buy the course, it may not start for 2 months. So what do you get today? Why would you buy today? So I'm actually going to do something really crazy this next time. I'm going to offer anybody who buys basically in the first month, a one-on-one problem-solving session individually with me over Skype.
Yeah.
This may not scale, but the reality is not only will I learn more about people, I'll connect with them. And my hypothesis is that those people who connect with me, just like you said, will be more likely to suffer through small pains as well as continue with the material and give me feedback.
Absolutely. There's this dance that happens, you know, when you're trying to figure out format for especially a larger number of people and what works and what doesn't. When I interviewed Brian Castle, he does this thing where he matches people in a mastermind. And I think that what's important is what you said of giving people the option, because I think we've all had the horrible experience of doing group assignments in school.
Yes.
And you know, you have like one or two people who are going to show up and be overachievers. And then you have, you know, one or two people who are just never going to be contributing to the group. And so it can present that dynamic if you try to force people into groups in your learning program. So I definitely think that there's value there of giving that option. But also there's something really powerful about having an accountability partner. Because one of the things I learned coming out of creating courses for colleges and universities is there's built-in motivation when you're creating. You don't have to figure out how to get people to do the work, right? They're going to do the work. With courses for entrepreneurs or, you know, consultants or whatever, you do have to figure out how to navigate around life so that people stay on track. And you talked about 12 weeks might be too long. You know, you do see people trying to basically run a marathon and you're going to tire out. If you're not a marathon runner and you start and you do a marathon, 12 weeks is going to feel like a marathon, that sustained effort. So I think the beautiful thing about creating learning programs, it's almost like a puzzle of figuring out what is going to work for your audience and your learners and what's going to keep them on track. And accountability and groups can be a really powerful way to do that.
You know, just as you were saying at the marathon, it made me think, okay, it's 12 weeks. What if I inserted 2 or 3 1-week breaks, mm-hmm. right? There's nothing wrong with that. In this week, there's no new material and the Q&A session is just going to be taking your questions or don't even show up at all. It's like spring break.
Yeah.
We all need a rest. And I think a lot of people thought, oh, 12 weeks, little bit of time, no big deal. But even 5 minutes a day in your super busy schedule, when you can opt out, I mean, I talk to people all the time who are double and triple booked for 7 hours a day in meetings.
Yeah.
I forget that.
Because your brain is
fried. Really my life. Yeah. Your brain is fried. So, you know, then you're hitting it on the weekends all at once and your answers become shorter and the discussion becomes less juicy and genuine because everyone's just like, okay, I've gotten something out of it. And I think that's maybe where some people are now, like, well, I've done 6 weeks. It's been good. I got something out of it, but I'm tired.
Yeah.
Even if I have this feeling in my head, like some of them think, even if I don't get anything more out of it, I've gotten my money's worth. So maybe I'll just like kind of coast the second half. So we'll see. And maybe I need to be okay with that, right? Because it's not actually all about me.
I've heard that before. You know, one last thing before we move on to the final three questions. One of my clients, we're working on a program that's actually a multi-year program. And what we realized, we had the root of awakening that when you have a year-long program around the last quarter of the year, especially for us in the US, people are just tapped out. There's no other way to say it. And you really have to scale back. So that was something that I had never thought about. And so we've had to adjust the group sessions because people, they're trying to wrap things up. And then the holidays are coming and they're trying to get everything done before all of that starts. So these are the nuances of learning programs, keeping all of that stuff in mind.
It's really exciting. It's new. I feel completely over my head. I run live workshops that last 2 to 3 days with 20 to 30 people. And I love doing that. And in some ways, I thought, this is going to be like that. Nope, not at all. Nothing like that in the least. So my friend Jerry Weinberg used to have this saying, he writes about it in his book, Secrets of Consulting, the law of raspberry jam. The further you spread it, the thinner it gets. And he basically says, you can either have influence or affluence, but you can't have both. Mm. And I'm certainly noticing that when I do a live workshop, it is deep and rich. When I do one-on-one coaching, it's deeper, it's richer. And it's almost like if I then spread that raspberry jam on a huge piece of bread, it just gets thinner and thinner. And that's kind of what a course is. I've got to find the balance where it still tastes good. It still has an impact, but it's just not going to be the same as sitting across from someone in a room and talking about the really hard parts of their job. I won't have that kind of experience and neither will they. So I'm trying to find a good way that balances my needs and the customer's needs of delivering value. Yeah, that kind of realizes that if I want to go broad and get 150 people in there, I'm going to be spread thin and each person's going to get a little bit less of me. And I think that's just true of what we're seeing in the industry today.
Marcus, this has been so rich. I'm not going to lie. I did not sleep well last night. I woke up and I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can make it. But this whole conversation has just really just livened me up. And I could talk about this stuff for hours. But we are down to the final three questions. First one is an easy one. What is next for you? Anything exciting coming up?
We're rebranding Software Leader Seminar because that's foolish and I like to do all the silly things. And we're trying to call it Tech Leader Training because who takes a seminar anymore?
Yeah.
And we're in full mode of advertising. So we're trying to find advertising and promotion outlets, something I've been really terrible at. And of course, I want to run it again in January. I want to pick a new platform. I want to do everything so differently that I can make a different set of mistakes this time.
I love it. Secondly, where can people find out more about you and your work?
MarcusBlankenship.com. Sign up for my mailing list if you are interested in leading experts, especially if you're technical and you are struggling to manage your team or your business. Or some people just follow me because they say, I like what you're doing. And I think it's great that you're an example of transparency and being really open and honest with your email list. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, you can join.
Awesome. Last question, Marcus. What's your why? Why do you get up and do this work every day?
I had a lot of terrible bosses. I was a pretty terrible boss when I started. And I found moving from being an expert to managing experts incredibly hard. I don't want other people to have that same problem. And I just want to make a better working world for programmers.
Yeah. Well, Marcus, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really love this conversation and I can't wait to share it with everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Marcus Blankenship. It's always cool. You know what? I think it's the first time I've spoken to course creators at different stages of their journey, but this was the first time speaking with someone who was in the midst of delivering his pilot version of his course when we did the interview. And that was really cool. So I just want to thank Marcus for coming on the show and being vulnerable and sharing what he was experiencing and sharing his expertise around tech leadership. Speaking of his expertise, are you into bonuses by chance? If so, Marcus and I recorded a bonus segment for you where we just got deep into leadership, what it takes to be a good leader, some things that you need to know, resources to check out, and pitfalls to avoid, as well as some common myths about leadership. So I hope that you check it out and enjoy it. If you're interested in grabbing that, there's two ways you can get it. The first one is easy. If you're in front of your computer, just head to get.zencourses.co/extra. Once again, that's get.zencourses.co/extra. Or if you are on your mobile device and running around town, you can text extra extra to the number 44222. Once again, extra extra to the number 44222. Either of those ways, you will get a link to watch the bonus segment, and not just the segment for Marcus, but you'll also get a link to check out the bonus videos for the previous episodes. Plus, you'll be added to my email list where you'll get updates from me about online course tips and products and all of that good stuff. All right, so opt in, get your bonuses. All right, my friends, that is my time. Remember, before you can level up your course, you must first level up your mind. As always, thank you for hanging out with me for another great episode. I do not take it for granted. I am Janelle Allen, and this has been Level Up Your Course. Peace.